Hello, friends. Come on in. Greg's got your favorite tea ready. Your stuffies are all nice and fluffed. I do apologize for the audio quality of this session. My equipment, unfortunately, had reset, and so we are left with my voice sounding a bit tinny. Luckily, I don't speak a lot in this episode. So get comfy, because there's a lot to process. Article 6. What comes next? The screen is black, and emerging from the depths like some long-forgotten beast are the words, 2 weeks later. They are disturbed and broken apart as the hull of a ship passes over them. We rise out of the surface, speeding past the rudder, to the windows of the captain's quarters. And the lens unfocuses into a blur of color, and we refocus inside, looking down at Jesse as he begins to awaken.
These stretches. Oh, that's a good stretch.
Gotta get that stretch, Foley. There is a strange noise that has slowly been getting louder the more that you're coming to. It's almost like a buzzing, but it's metallic. The buzzing is coming from near your captain's quarters door, probably underneath the little cuckoo clock there that serves as Luciana's house.
What the fuck is that? Okay. He gets up, stumbles for a second as he gains his balance, and heads over to the door.
There are 5 pipes. They have openings that are a little bit larger than the pipe itself, like a bugle or a horn would. And where that enlarged flange meets the pipe is a little tab that you can open and close. One of the pipes from the officer's quarters is buzzing.
Jesse's phone is on vibrate.
Well, the way how I imagined it is if you want to get the attention of someone, you have to hit the pipe. And so it channels that noise all the way through. And it's like a copper tube. And so you've got that metallic buzz happening.
He like reaches out awkwardly and grabs the little gate and like pulls it open.
Captain.
Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah. But what is... Where are you?
I'm in my cabin, my quarters.
Oh.
It's Elliot, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just making sure.
I'm so glad you did. I would have had no idea I was lost.
Right. So, I just wanted to inform you that we've finally figured out where we are. We finally pinpointed where we've been listed this entire time since we popped out of the Seventh Sea.
Oh, where are we?
We are 3 days outside Makaro. Due south.
Oh, all right. That's good news.
Oh my god.
Is that
well,
all?
No, you go.
I already love this. I love this so much.
Is that all?
I do have some new findings in Sirenith matters, if you wanted to listen to those, but that could be for another time. I do have Mama Coco with me here, right now. Here, you go.
Pass the pipe over to Harris.
This is incredible.
Oh, fuck.
Good morning, Captain.
It is a morning to be good on, Harrison.
That's very true. What are your orders now that we know where we're going?
Let's go to Makaro.
That sounds like a plan. All right. Elliot, do we like say goodbye? I don't know. How do we tell when we're done speaking? I don't know. We haven't really discussed that. Do we just like shut the thing? What do we do? Over and out, I guess?
Bye.
The second that you shut the gate, there's no sound whatsoever.
Jesse gets up, heads out the door, and down onto the top deck.
The moment that you step onto the deck, you hear Roz's ringing voice from the rigging.
Oh, fuck.
Capitano on deck!
Thank you, Raz.
Buenos mañana, Capitano. How are you feeling?
Ask me in an hour. I'm still waking up.
You do look a lot more colorful than you did before.
That's what a week of sleeping will do for you. Doctor's orders.
Mama Coco steps out of Elliot's quarters, which used to be Charles's across the way, and shouts up to Raz.
Raz, open those other sails, will ya? Let's head to Mikado.
All of a sudden, you see Raz moving in a strange manner. You're used to Raz swinging back and forth, opening the sails, closing them, doing the whole thing, but he's doing something completely different now. And as he lowers himself down the main mast, he is pulling what essentially is a long lever. And that lever unlatches two booms on either side of the main mast, and they open and land. And when they do, two sails fold out like fins. And the moment that they do, they catch the excess wind on the sides of the ship, and the ship lurches a little bit faster and begins to turn as Mama Coco heads up to the helm and passes you by. What do you think? I put them in for you.
Well, how do you mean?
Hawthorne tells me that you can manipulate wind, and while that's great and all, we don't want to rip the mainsail or the mizzenmast or anything like that, or compromise ourselves if we need to make a speedy escape. And so I had these put in so that you can funnel whatever wind you want into them, and if they break, they're easily repaired.
Great. I love that. That's a great addition. How's everyone doing?
Kind of pats you on the shoulder. Well, to be honest, we've been kind of low-key anxious. We didn't really know where we were for a little while, so of course we were trying to find our bearings. What do we do?
You could have asked me.
I wanted to let you sleep. You needed it.
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Mama Cole.
You're welcome.
To Mikado, we sail.
You know where I'll be.
You got it.
She heads on up to the helm.
I think Jesse thinks about climbing up to the crow's nest, and then it's like, that's probably a bad idea right now. So I think he probably heads to the bow.
You head to the bow. There's a woman there that you don't recognize. She is sitting on a barrel, and on top of the barrel in front of her is a chess set, and she is currently playing without an opponent. She is dressed in all sorts of cloth, leather, maybe satin. She does have a vested doublet on and a couple of shoulder guards, arm guards as well. She's a very ornate sword at her side. She has a musketeer's hat with a single feather in it. And her ice blonde hair is loose and gently flowing in the breeze, and her gorgeous robin's blue eyes flick up at you and stare at you for a little while.
Top of the morning to you.
And she just smiles and nods.
I'm sorry, have we met?
I've heard a lot about you, but no, I don't think we've properly met.
I am Captain Jesse Nakansa.
She tips her hat to you. I'm Bishop Bjorn Rinson.
Oh, Boots' girl.
I am.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Don't mind my asking. What are you doing here?
As you ask that, out from the side of the ship, Raz swings by close to the chess set. A piece is moved, and then he swings away. And she looks down at the piece, nods thoughtfully, moves a piece on the chessboard, lifts her head slightly up and says, check. And you hear Raz start swearing in Castilian.
I have so many questions. How long have you been here for?
A month or so. I am your master of sharps.
Master of sharps?
My father told me that you were missing your master at arms. And while I'm not versed at all in the firing of such mechanisms, I have studied abroad in the academies of Villanova as well as the School of Odessa for dueling.
You're a duelist.
I am.
Well, that's great. I'm sorry, I find it odd that I wasn't informed of this.
I was told that you were away on important business.
Yes, I was. My sincerest apologies, Bishop. It's very nice to meet you.
She stands up, puts a hand over her heart, and gives you a, not a curtsy, not a formal bow, but a acknowledgement. It is very good to meet you.
He reaches his hand out, remembers that it's not gloved, and he pulls away for a second and offers it again.
Just to clarify, this is the devil hand that isn't gloved?
Yeah, his right hand.
She looks at your hand, and one of her white eyebrows raises in question. And Roz swings by, moves a piece, and swings in between both of you, and she does not flinch. I was informed that you had a missing hand.
Things have changed since I've been away.
I see. Medical science has improved since last I was out and about.
It's not quite like that, unfortunately. It's a bit more complicated.
Extends her hand. There's no gloves. And shakes yours firmly. One grip, one shake, and you do feel the calluses of holding swords.
Probably feels so weird for him, not having had physical contact with anything for over a year.
Yeah. I look forward to getting to know you better.
I do as well. And without a sword...
One does not need a sword to be formidable. I will prove that to you.
I very much look forward to it. If you need me, come find me.
Will do.
She gives you that bow again, moves back over to the chess set, moves one piece, checkmate. Roz drops down, looks at the chessboard, looks at her.
How many does that make? 32-0.
Oh, Roz.
Again. Set it up again.
I think he's probably going to head to the helm. With Mama Coco.
Camera goes below decks, down to Klaus's infirmary. But you begin to wake up. Water is next to you with lemon wedges in it.
It's kind of blindly pads over the table, and the glass is just out of reach. But I think there is somebody here that pushes the glass closer. And Lillian takes it and takes much larger sip than he has been. Puts it back and rubs the sleep from their eyes. And he turns over to his right side, and I think he sees Cosette.
Good morning, Monsieur Grévaux.
Hello there, Mr. Sparser.
Welcome back to the living.
Aye. It's good to be back. I was wondering when you were going to come and chastise me. And Waylon just holds up the stump.
Chastise you? No.
I'm sorry that I was not able to keep our previous arrangement.
And what arrangement are you referring to?
Waylon's been avoiding making eye contact with her since seeing that it was her sitting next to them, and does so for the first time.
Every drop of blood is precious.
And do you think that I am beside myself with anger that you have severed your own arm in order to curse the devil himself?
The thought had crossed my mind more than a few times, but now that you say it like that, maybe not.
Look at it from my perspective. How can I fault you for that? If you want to have a longer conversation about perhaps making you a prosthetic much like mine,
she taps her leg.
Perhaps I can send a letter to my father and we will see.
As far as I understand, your father is quite the craftsman when it comes to
prosthetics that have a dual purpose?
Aye. How have you been? Bodaventura got you running all over the place for her yet?
I am carrying many messages lately.
And how has that been on you?
Oh, fine.
I don't believe you. If you think I lost my sense for detecting bullshit while I was on the freighter, that's one of the few things I was able to take with me.
It is taxing. It is difficult, and it is always terrifying to walk the ways, but it is for a good cause. And in the end, we will all be the better for it.
All right.
I have unfortunately developed a sweet tooth to rival Charles's, now that I am drawing blood all the time. And as she says that, she is eating a cookie, one of Charlotte's cookies. And Klaus reminds me to tell you that even though he said it earlier, you may not have been cognizant enough to hear it. You are free to go back to your room and walk about the decks. Do light, very light duty.
Of course.
No more than lifting a loaf of bread for you.
I don't know that I could lift much more than that anyway. And Waylon, with some difficulty, lifts himself up into a sitting position. Oh, everything hurts.
It will for a while, and you will have phantom pain, but it will get better.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't really want to think about the past 6 months a whole lot.
I can only imagine.
No. No, you can't.
If you'll excuse me?
As she gets up and goes to walk towards the door, Waylon calls out one last time. Actually, Cosette, I think I lied.
Hmm?
Of anyone on this ship, maybe you're the one person who can.
She nods.
Thank you, Miss Marisol.
Oui. Monsieur Grandpa. And she walks away, leaving you alone in the infirmary.
Waylon's wearing not necessarily a hospital gown or anything of the like, but very basic clothing. And I imagine is not currently wearing his boots.
Nope.
Are they beside the bed? Or is there another form of footwear? Or is there a way, is there shoes for him, effectively?
No, we've got Waylon's grippers out.
We've got Waylon's fuzzy slippers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There are a pair of boots, but they're not your buckle boots. They're slip-ons, essentially.
Waylon kind of very sardonically smiles to himself. And one by one slips on each of the boots. And I imagine there's a pair of crutches next to the bed.
One crutch.
Oh, that's true. And Waylon looks down at his left arm and looks back at the door and looks back at his arm holding the crutch. And then as he's about to try and maneuver his hand to grab the door while still holding the crutch, he realizes that Cosette has left it open just a little bit ajar. And so he just kind of uses the crutch to move it, and he steps out. The infirmary is below decks, correct?
Yes, near the galley, which is underneath Cosette and Elliot's quarters.
Right. He's going to make his way over to the galley.
Boots is in there.
Lifts and bangs the crutch on the floor a couple times.
Mr. Bjarnarson.
He lifts his head up out of the little door. Oh! Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you feeling?
Feeling, which is more than I can say for how I have been. Oh, it's good to see you, first of all, but...
Good to see you, too, up and about.
You wouldn't happen to have any anything prepared, snack-wise.
He puts a plate up on the pass, and it is full of mango, papaya, starfruit, and a couple of bits of beef jerky.
Where did you get these?
Well, you're not the only one on the ship now that has a tooth for fruit.
Cosette.
Cosette almost exclusively only eats cookies if she needs sweets.
Charles isn't back, is he?
No, Charles is still in Aragosta. It's my daughter.
You're fucking what?
My eldest girl, yes.
What's she doing here?
She is here to take on the job of Master of Sharps. She has been here to help us learn how to fight a little bit better than before.
Oh, very good.
Also, she was between jobs and I didn't want her staying at home.
Of course. Well, I look forward to meeting her.
Oh, you will meet her in the morning, for sure.
In the morning?
She is your physical therapist.
Oh. Right. Klaus mentioned something about that.
So eat up and gain your strength.
Thank you, Boots. I appreciate it.
Waylon kind of hobbles over very slowly. Is trying to balance the bowl while kind of like hooking his arm underneath the crutch, and is just managed to get it over to the table without spilling it everywhere.
And he sits himself down. And I think this is probably one of the first things that he's had that has not been bread and water.
And broth.
As he takes a bite of the papaya, and that flavor just rushes over his tongue. There's almost a moment where he breaks down, but he bites the inside of his lip. And I think there's a moment where, as he's walking along, he's looking up at the stairs that lead towards the main deck, and he goes to take a step up, and there's a panic that grips his chest. And it's that tightness, almost as if a giant hand has wrapped itself around his torso and is squeezing all the air out of him. And I think he falls down.
Come on. Fuck.
There is a noise behind you. Sounds like the creaking of a staircase. At the back of your neck, you feel a breath. Just a quick...
And Waylon just kind of leans back into the fur that he knows is there.
She is very warm and toasty.
Hello, Nasarsa. Have you been?
Do you look up at Ursa?
Mm-hmm.
She's not half hybrid anymore.
Oh, honey.
It's daytime, by the way.
What a pair are we?
Another rough snort. And she just nudges you very gently.
How do I even look him in the eye? How do I even face him? He wasn't there for me. That's not why he came. I know it.
Ursa grunts in negative.
Ursa, he looked at me like I wasn't even there.
She opens her mouth, and what comes out is that strained, graspy, horrible voice that you remember.
Had to hold him from leaping back on Fraser.
Waylon just looks back at her in confusion. Puts a hand on the side of her face. Don't strain yourself on my accord, but I get the message.
She grunts again and lowers her head so that you can use it to position yourself to stand up again. She's got big, fuzzy, rounded ears now.
Hey, Ursa. What do you call a guy with no arms and no legs? In the ocean.
She tilts her head at you, curiously.
Bob.
She laughs in the way that only a bear can, really.
Waylon kind of holds out his arm and with Ursa's help, stands back up again. We'll figure this out. Together.
One step at a time.
Right you are.
She gives you one last little nudge on your lower back.
And Wieland slowly starts to ascend the stairs.
Jesse, you watch as Wieland slowly rises from the stairwell. One crutch in hand.
Fuck, alright.
Hi, it's here! Hi, everybody! It's here!
Oh, shit. Hi, Pat.
Hi, buddy.
It's been a while! Wieland comes up top deck, and Mama Coco stiffens, turns her head over to Jesse, turns her head back to the direction of where Wieland is now entering top decks, and turns her head back at Jesse and says, I'm gonna let you be.
All right.
Wieland's still kind of at the bottom of the stairs. He looks at you for a moment, and then with all the strength he can muster, gives you a salute, and then returns to holding his crutch.
Jesse walks down the stairs and takes Wayland's crutch and goes onto that side and wraps their arm around his neck and starts helping to lift him up the stairs.
Wieland was not expecting that.
Zoe was not expecting that.
Does not say a word. I barely looks at you.
Jesse doesn't say anything either. There's a barrel up top that I think Jesse deposits you onto.
Captain Nakansa, before you say anything, I do want to thank you for the rescue. Well, it might not have been your initial intention, it is appreciated nonetheless. As my father was in your companionship, I assume you got the letter.
It's Jesse. And I don't think I've been awake enough to read it yet.
Fair enough.
This is so hard.
Very hard.
It's so
yeah.
difficult.
It's rough, it's different.
Yeah.
Hey, Evan, buddy, I love you.
I love you very much.
Hey, guys, I love you both very much.
Love you too.
We both love you very
so much. You'll be great.
I won't lie, you've looked better.
It's hard to say I've looked worse, but
at least you're alive.
There's that.
Did you know all that time?
I did.
Why didn't you ever say anything?
And Wieland looks at his hand. Jesse, when you walked into the bucket that day, I... and it's ironic to say this now. I thought you were the devil come to claim me. And when you came and you sat down and you greeted me as a friend, I thought maybe I'd gotten a second chance. An opportunity put in front of me to make things right.
The first day we met, he told me you killed him. When we were going to find Royce and the crew of the Black Betty on the beach, you exclaimed that you were Samuel Flynn. I knew something was off, but I didn't say anything because I didn't want to believe it.
Well, I did lie to you by omission. What I told you was technically the truth. I was the one who killed Samuel Flynn, because on that day, that part of me died. I'm very sorry, Jesse.
How much of you is still him?
As far as it felt, I think Maeve took him.
No motivations. No desire to fight for the ATC.
I'm sorry to laugh. Jesse, I never really had any desire to fight for the ATC.
You did a damn good job convincing us that you did.
I was working for Avalon. The Queen had a mission to uncover their dealings and shady business practices, and she needed a man on the inside.
To go along with it.
I'm not excusing my actions, but it had to be convincing. When we met your mother, and we found out what she'd been up to this whole time, it was like looking at everything I had ever wanted to be, and everything that I had failed to accomplish.
How many of my brothers did you brand?
It was just your ship.
They were such good people.
I can imagine.
I came back for you, because I told myself Jonah wasn't going to take anyone again, and because you were my best friend. But you also happened to be one of the worst people I've ever met. Wieland, I stand for freedom. I do believe freedom is worth a second chance.
Jesse, I have no expectation of keeping my position.
You are keeping your position.
I'm a shit master at arms with only one of them.
I'm not gonna let you go. It's not who I am, and you know that. You're peening my fucking ass, Wieland. And I will never be able to forgive you for what you did to me.
I don't expect it.
If any bit of the Wieland that I know as my best friend is there, that I am willing to build that back up again, I'm just gonna need patience.
Jesse, you're my best friend as well. And I have loved you like a brother. And I still do.
I feel the same way, which is why I want you here. I am willing to fix this, at least to try.
Then I will try as well.
Good.
I'll take my leave if I may, Captain. Jesse.
I'll help you down.
Thank you.
Jesse comes over and takes his arm and leads them down and does not look at them.
Jesse, on the way up the stairs, it almost felt like Wieland was afraid to touch you in any way, shape, or form. On the way back down, they are gripping onto your shoulder as if it is a lifeline. It is very clear that the entire way down the stairs, they were crying, just very silently to themselves.
Thank you, Captain.
You're welcome.
And Wieland does their best to salute again and almost loses balance.
Stop.
Look, just...
Don't do that.
All right.
Thank you.
And Wieland makes their way back to their room, I think.
And Jesse watches as they limp away. And looks to his hand again. Heads back to his quarters.
Wieland.
Mm-hmm.
There's a door on your quarters. As you approach, it opens.
Oh, Elliot.
Sorry, Wieland, I...
Oh, it's okay. It's quite all right.
Captain, and so I figured you might want to... Since Klaus said that you could go back to your room, I figured you'd want to... Just look.
Okay.
He opens the door all the way and moves out of the way so you can walk in. And the armory... Like all the rifles, all the guns, all the muskets, all the cleaning equipment, all of that stuff is not in that room.
Elliot, what happened here?
Well, as per Hawthorne's request, in order to fit you with a proper door, we couldn't close off the armory, so we moved it. It's just outside your door now. So that you can have a proper room.
Aye, yeah, actual... Shit. Oh, okay. Oh, this is excellent. This is... That's good. I didn't have the flag anymore, and I was going to need to replace it, so...
Wieland?
Yeah. I'm okay.
Are you sure? Your face is all blotchy and red. Are you sick? Do I need to get Klaus?
No, Elliot. Elliot.
He puts the inside of his wrist to your forehead. Oh, God, you're hot. You might have a fever. Infection might be setting in. I need to go get... I'll be...
Elliot. Help me to the bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Elliot takes the crutch gently away from you and puts your arm over his shoulders. And he's not as strong as Jesse, but he takes most of your weight and
leads you to the bed. Sits you down.
I've been working out while I've been gone.
As per Miss Bishop's request. Yeah, even though I don't like push-ups at all.
Moylan sits down on the bed. Does his best to, like, pull himself up into it to be, like, you know, sitting down. Heard you weren't sleeping while I was away.
Well, you heard correct.
And Waylon reaches out and kind of just brushes the deep bags that are definitely under Elliot's eyes.
How did you all find us anyway? How did we even get to the Seventh Sea?
Once we figured out that Tiburon is in the Seventh Sea, it was very easy to convince Captain Ogwe to bring us there.
Right.
The hard part was convincing him to find the Devil Jonah.
How did you manage that?
I didn't do any of that. That's a question you should ask Ursa and Agnes.
Oh, really?
They were quite convincing.
Fair enough. I'm exhausted. You look like shit. And that's coming from me.
Yeah. Well, I'll get another 45 minutes of sleep. It's no big deal.
Elliot.
What?
Come here.
And Waylon kind of scooches over in the bed so that Elliot can sit down.
He sits down next to you.
And Waylon just lays back in the bed, and as he's falling backwards, just grabs Elliot and just pulls him to lay beside him.
Well, I imagine it'd be kind of hard to sleep with me next to you.
Elliot.
And he just holds his hand.
Let's just get some rest.
Elliot rolls over so that he's like on his elbow and takes his glasses off and takes it off the chain and folds them and leans over to put them on the little stool next to you and is looking down at your face as he's doing that.
I missed you quite a bit.
I missed you too.
I think Waylon just looks at Elliot and looks in his eyes.
Can I kiss you?
Excuse me while I have a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot leans down and kisses you and presses his lips to yours.
And Waylon just holds the kiss for a moment and pulls away and lets Elliot kind of like fall with Waylon's arm around his shoulders and rolls onto his side and just leans in and kisses him one more time.
When you pull away, Elliot leans in and kisses you one more time. And unfortunately, he doesn't have enough energy to pull away that time. He falls the fuck asleep.
Good. Now, sleep.
And Waylon falls into unconsciousness.
I think we get a moment of Jesse getting dressed, putting on his coat. We see him change out his shirt, and we see the scar in his chest where Angelica stabbed Bramble into him. And then we see him put a shirt on. I think he goes to grab his belt, and the sheath is gone for Bramble. Sheath has disappeared. I think it's probably returned back to where the blade is.
On your desk is the letter from Wayland, and it just says to Jesse.
He sees Wayland's letter, and two of Angelica's knives fall out. One sticks into the corner, and the other misses it. He pulls the one in the corner and lays it down. Puts his fingers on the letter. And I think he just leaves them there as they are and limps out towards the helm.
Mama Coco has been there this whole time. She kind of like tilts her head. How you feeling?
Physically, I'm tired as hell. And it feels like I got stabbed in the chest.
From what Klaus tells me, you did.
I did.
Hmm.
Emotionally, Yeah, not great either.
Well, if it's any consolation, the air feels a bit lighter around you now.
Could be the blood loss.
It's not the blood loss.
The seed I took from Charles, and a new one I got from my sister. I feel something festering. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I feel anxious and afraid.
Patience. Although, not to put any more pressure on you, Ursa's running out of time.
Yeah. That's next on the list. I have the helm, Varys. Go take a rest.
Alright.
We'll be in Makara soon enough.
Couple more days.
Less than that.
Don't go pushing yourself, alright? Don't need you bedridden for another week.
I don't feel like I would be pushing myself. I feel comfortable with it.
That's what I like to hear. Do keep it down a bit, though, alright? I don't need no howling wind while I'm trying to rest.
No promises.
She pats you on the back and moves to let you assume the helm.
He grabs the spokes in the helm, and he wraps his hands around it. I think he feels the vines, and rubs his thumb up against one of the petals of any of the roses that are coming out and blooming. Closes his eyes and takes a deep breath. Roz.
You hear rigging moving, and then you see him. Ay, Capitano!
Open up the sails, Roz.
Right away, sir. Hear all the sails unfurl and open, series of ropes being stretched and pulled and released.
There is no movement from Jesse. I will spend a hero point.
Hooray.
There begins a steady gust. Quiet, but strong. That lurches the rose forward and faster.
Onward. Towards the horizon. Towards Makaro. Towards goats in the ocean.
And a good drink.
Yep.
The camera kind of pans away as the rose is gaining distance and becoming a speck on the horizon line. And a wave splashes over the lens. Another ship is coming towards us, and its sails are blood red. And as it passes the camera, we hear the screaming of the world, and we watch as the water that was blue and clear turns red, and the red ghost sinks.
Don't know what that means.
What the fuck? Oh no.
But okay.
And with that, we have entered a new Makaro arc. We hope to see you again for more Goats in the Ocean. Until then, see you next time, friends. And remember, be safe and well.